Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. We hope you are sitting back in your favorite chair with your drink of choice. Relax, my friends, but don't get too relaxed. We want you to enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I'm your co-host, Michael Eric Owens, and I'm here with my co-host,
DT.
DT up in the house. We are so excited to be here. Is this the third one, brother?
This is the third one. They say what? Third is a charm.
That's right. Three is a charm. And man, you know what? We're going to go into, we're going to come back to you, DT, because you've been around the world.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of travel.
And but first, let's hit some in the news items here, man. They had the presidential debate
last night.
And man, that was interesting. I don't know if you had a chance.
Yeah, I did actually get a chance to watch a little bit of it, and it was really kind of awkward to me, man. The kind of a show they were putting on for the crowd. I seen before the show actually started, it kind of went back and, you know, cut it to the official beginning. But they were kind of hyping the crowd up, trying to get them ready to get excited and, you know, cheer on the crowd and everything. And that kind of just seemed a little bit staged to me. Whereas that natural excitement of a debate, you know, bring its own natural energy, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You know, they say it was one of the largest debates in recent times. There were over 5,000 people there. And you know, what's interesting to me is first of all, you had two debates. You know, you had the junior debate, but
that was the seven elects, right? That were on the lower end of the poll.
Yeah. That was at the lower end of the poll. And so my takeaway from the debate was I thought it was good to have them come together, for them to put forth their platforms and whatnot. But what I took away from it is a continuing theme that troubles me about Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. This attack on women. I mean, when you think about it, you know, last week or so, his lawyer was on, I believe it was CNN, and the allegations that Ivana Trump, when she was married to Donald Trump, in their divorce decree, talked about potential rape allegations. And the lawyer said, well, there is no rape between husband and wife. Which outrage, of course, you know, especially women, but I believe men alike. That sort of abuse is abuse. Rape is rape, regardless of whether you are married, not married. It is rape, and it is wrong. And to articulate such a archaic view, I thought was just appalling. And then last night, Megyn Kelly, I believe, brought up, and I just want to just bring up what she said in her question to him, which I thought it was an important moment and one that, you know, we can answer a certain question, and it speaks to our character. And in last night's debate, she said to Kelly, asked Trump about remarks that he had made about women on social media. If you've called him, and this is Megyn Kelly talking to Mr. Trump, you've called women you don't like fat pigs, dogs, slobs, and disgusting animals. And then he says, only Rosie O'Donnell, right? So he takes a shot at her, which is, I thought, was a poor taste. But she butts in and she says, no, it wasn't, she continued. For the record, it was made well beyond Rosie O'Donnell. And I mean, man, what are your thoughts, man, on a guy that's going to get up, or a guy that's in a power position, is just going to degrade women and talk about them in any way that he feels that he can, simply because in his eyes, I guess, he's on top of the world?
I think we've done a really bad job at giving the woman her credit. And from the beginning of time itself, you know, we haven't recognized a woman in the way that has been equally uplifting as it has been for the man. And that's just, I think his whole tune, his whole attitude towards women is just, you know, more the same of that attitude. And that he can't see past himself to give, you know, the woman her real credit, you know, whether that be Rosie O'Donnell or whoever else, you know, he could reference in that aspect.
You know, you're so right, man. It's an ongoing theme that we see, the misogynist quality of the American landscape, and how men of power, not just men of power, but we are talking about a man of power today, economic prowess, if we could say that, that, in my opinion, has low regard for women. Mm-hmm. I mean, man, I would never dream of looking at a woman and calling her a fat pig, degrading a woman in that way, man. Not just a woman, a man, but it speaks to his character and in the way I think that we can clearly say he has no respect for women. And I can't believe a woman would get up and vote for a man that has no respect for women. Right. That's all, you know. And again, I don't care what your political views are, what your ideology is. The fact that this man disrespects women, the fact that he uses women as objects for his own personal satisfaction.
And has had a history of that.
Exactly. Has a history of that. It's sick to me, man. So that was my takeaway from the debate, man. I'm like, really? This guy, because basically he said, and I'm paraphrasing it and I'm simplifying. Well, I you can simplify Trump in any way that you can because he's so simple minded, in my opinion. True. Right. But this idea of, well, I just say what I say. I'm not politically correct.
Yeah, that's what he said. He doesn't have time for political correctness. And to some degree, you know, I agree with that. You know, we don't have time always to just be so correct in the way we're approaching the situation or the way that we're discussing the situation. But there has to be respect in the fact that you know what you're intending to say, or that your intentions could potentially hurt somebody else, or...
And I agree with you, but this is what I'm gonna say about political correctness. People use that phrase when they offend people. Mm-hmm. You see, in other words, you shouldn't be offended because I'm not being politically correct.
Right.
No. What you being is offensive is what you're being.
Disrespectful.
Exactly. Disrespectful. You're not being politically correct. I mean, to me, the idea of Trump saying, "I just say what's on my mind," is one of the most idiotic things I think a person can. Nobody with wisdom and understanding and wants to move the conversation forward and wants to do something with this country says everything that's on their mind.
We call that impulsiveness.
You know,
and
man,
it's not good to be impulsive.
Man, I'm in meetings, okay? And sometimes I got stuff on my mind, trust me, you don't want to hear it, okay? And I'm being wise by keeping that stuff because you know what? It's going to make me look crazy. So the idea that I can say whatever on my mind and people somehow respect that lunacy is just beyond me, man. So I'm looking forward to the Republican Party moving on to something more substantive, man, and this whole idea of the marginalization of women, of black folk, of Latino, man, it's got to stop, man, because hey, one mic, one voice, that's what it is, man. We are all on the same page together.
What about him denouncing the pledge?
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think everybody kind of seen that coming because he looked around and waited to see if anybody else was going to raise a hand, and then boom.
Well, to me, if I am a conservative, okay, I'm not saying I am a conservative. Let me just put that out there, okay? I'm not saying I'm liberal. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying I am who I am, okay? But if I would ascertain to that particular party and ideology for a candidate to come up and say, if you don't choose me, I'm going to run my own thing. You shouldn't even be on this platform. You should be running your own thing.
Right.
Because you're hijacking the party. And the party should reject that and go, you know what? See you later then. Because you're not true. You're not committed to this party. He went on further to say, DT, well, if I respect the person that you pick, yeah, I'll get behind it. what happens, man, to at the end of the day, we're going to move things forward. We're going to rally the troops. We're going to get behind our candidate, and we're going to try to win this election. What happened to those days?
Now, did you see anybody really in support of one another up there on the stage? Because he said that you know, he'd be supportive, and I'm sure all of them do, like you said, rally the troops when it's time to go. But in the outset, it's not like that, and everybody's at a cutthroat kind of situation. And I didn't see anybody really giving that support to anybody else in a sincere way.
It was a dogfight. So looking forward to a month from now. The next one will be on CNN, they tell us. Also in the news is Chuck Schumer's today is supposed to break away from President Obama and the Iran deal, which is, I think, really interesting. Jon Stewart had his final daily show. And they say it was an ultimate moment of zen. And then Kim Kardashian and Hillary Clinton takes the ultimate selfie. So and there's other things happening in the news. We do know that the latest New Yorker magazine has all of Cosby's accusers, 35 women. They're sitting in chairs, and DT, they have one empty chair for Bill Cosby. Yeah. That is on the New Yorker.
So it's going to be like an intervention type of situation.
Man, hey, I don't.
Like, man, you've heard all of us.
Exactly. You need to sit down. And but, you know, they did, I guess, a judge recently. Cosby's going to have to with the young lady that was 15 at the time at the Playboy Mansion, he's going to have to give a deposition on that coming up here pretty soon. So that story is not going anywhere from us. In closing in the news, Hulk Hogan was caught on tape, you know, having this racist rant about black people. Supposedly his daughter was dating a black guy. And we, you know what, we're going to get into interracial dating. We're not going to do that today, but one of our listeners, and we appreciate that. We love the
feedback. Yeah, for sure.
And one of our listeners said, you know, why don't you guys talk about interracial dating and interracial couples and that the fact that people are still against that today and how that's an issue. And so what we gonna do, DT? We're going to talk about it.
And please send those suggestions in. We'd love to hear more of what you'd like to hear us talk about. What's on your mind? Any specific things that are in your day-to-day that you just need to deal with? We can handle it. One mic, one voice.
We have a new website, too.
What is it?
OneMicOneVoice.com.
It's official.
It's official. And, brother, let me tell you something. You look smooth, too, man. I'm going to tell you, the way you posing and profiling. And that brings me to this point, man. Man, you know what, man? It is an honor to have this show because this brother is not just local, international. Man, you were, like, showing those pictures, man. Man, I looked at one of them, man, and the brother was like Aquaman. I mean, the brother was down in the deep, man. I'm like, man, look at DT, man.
Scuba diving, man.
Man, tell everybody where you were at, man, and just talk about the love you got there.
Man, I took a trip to Central America to visit Belize. Was known once as British Honduras and then reclaimed as Belize. But when I got there, I actually learned that it was Belize first before the British Honduras came and changed it to British. Mm. Well, the British came and changed it to British Honduras. The people that lived there knew that place as Belize before that whole invasion had started. So that was kind of cool. I got a chance to go check out the Mayan ruins, of course, some of the sacred caves that they had, where these people were, the Mayans did not really know there was a drought going on. And for whatever reason, it didn't rain for, you know, 10, 20 years sometimes.
Wow.
And they were thinking to themselves, like, what do we do to impress the gods? What do we do to show our gratitude so that we can grow food? We can, you know, they really idolize corn. So what can we do to please the gods in a way that'll bring rain and help us sustain life here? So they did a lot of these sacrifices. And so we visited a cave in particular where, you know, that's all it was dedicated to, just, you know, sacrificial practices. And they had this place they called Xibalba. And this is where Xibalba is.
Hold on, bro. Brother speaking the language. Hold on, man. You just taking it to another level. But I just had to cut you off,
okay,
man.
Okay.
The accent was legit. So, okay, go ahead, brother.
But anyways, we got a chance to go through this cave where, you know, they sacrifice people trying to please the gods and bring about growth for the land. Did some scuba diving, went on the beach, just hang out in the sun.
Bro, you do got a tan, too.
I do got a tan.
You came back. Black people can tan. Okay, so
man, you
let's
know what?
Just,
I actually,
you know,
love my all my shades, man.
Yeah, all I the love shades, all, of them. All the shades, man. I tell you what, you were truly missed, man. Man, I was lost, man. I'm like, this dude is over there, man. You like land, sea, and air, man. You like a Navy SEAL or something, man. I'm like, man, I know what I want to do when I grow up. I want to be like DT. Forget being like Mike. But, man, today, let's talk a little bit about, because we've had some things happen. I want to in a minute jump to black on black crime. But first of all, we had the passing of Bobby Christina. And let's talk a little bit, because I think all of us are familiar with Bobby Brown, Whitney Houston, with the high profile life that she lived, but in how she died. Bobby Christina, you know, she was kind of in the gray area. I really didn't know much about her.
I'm saying for me, as opposed to the tabloid stuff, you know, her and the guy that was supposed to be a friend of the family, them going on and establishing a relationship. I didn't really know much about her personally. But what I can say is that I know that little girl was dealing with a lot of stuff, and that I know it could only be spoken to from her side, but from the outside, just considering all the things that were going on within that family, I know she probably had some really heavy stuff on her plate.
And I mean, being the daughter of Bobby Brown, and, you know, I'm a little bit older cat, and Bobby, you know, Bobby is a talented brother, extremely talented, man, but got some serious demons. And to have that influence, to come up in the shadows of that, and then, I mean, Whitney was like America's sweetheart, man. And like I say, this is all, right, the perspective on the outside, because we never know what's going on behind closed doors or what's happening internally within the self. But when she hooked up with Bobby Brown, man, it was like
wow.
right.
That's the one. That's okay. Okay.
And, you know, she had a different swag to herself, which turned a lot of people off. And then I didn't catch much of the reality show.
I didn't catch any of it. But you know what, man? I remember seeing Whitney, and she was giving a live performance, and she was just not Whitney, man.
Yeah,
like you said,
yeah,
she has such a
beautiful voice, man. Yeah.
Unmatched, you know, at that time, and to see her fall, it was hard to watch Whitney cracking like that.
You know, drugs, alcohol,
crack.
The dependence. Yeah. I mean, let's just keep it real. One mic, one voice. Crack cocaine, right? That can ruin your life. I mean, few people bounce back from the pipe. You know, it's like a spiraling downhill, man. It's not a peace pipe. Nah, I ain't got no peace in it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm serious. Stay away from it. Don't do drugs. They will ruin
public service
your life. Yeah, there you go. Okay, one mic, one voice. Do not do drugs. But, you know, my heart goes out to that family, man, because anytime you lose a loved one or a child, and the way they hung in there for her, and it seemed to me like they were desperate in trying to find some type of solution, a cure, some better advice. I mean, she was shopped around to different locations, to different opinions and doctors, and to come to that conclusion and to let her go, which I think she was gone a long time ago.
Yeah.
I had a similar situation with my dad, man. Had to make that decision. He wasn't there. He was gone. Mm. Okay. It's a tough family decision. So my heart, my prayers go out to that family. But I'm a believer in, you know, you got to learn from stuff like this. You know, this is not just about sadness or grief. It's about recognition and revelation. You know, how can I change my life, make my life better? How can I not go down that same road? How can I deal with my problems differently? Because the cycle, man, is vicious.
Man, I always believe that, you know, people tell you when you're young, like, man, learn from your mistakes, learn from your mistakes. But I learned growing up that, you know, those mistakes don't have to be your own, and that you can look at people around you and see what not to do and what you want to do in retrospect to the negative you see or the things that don't necessarily align with the life you want to live. So definitely learning from other folks' mistakes could save you a lot of headaches and a lot of head bumps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Black on black crime. I got to go there. Let me tell you what I don't like to hear. What bothers me. Black on black crime is always spoken about in reference to white police officers killing black people, murdering black people. Now, again, the myth out there is that the black community does not care about black on black crime, or we don't put the same emphasis as a white officer killing or murdering a black person. That is a myth, folks. Black on black crime is an epidemic in the black community. We are, DT, disgusted with black on black crime. Tired of it. Of seeing mothers losing sons. You know, talk to me, man, from your perspective, this issue on black crime.
Man, it's something that I'm not a stranger to. Something that I'm not unfamiliar with. It's something that I can speak to firsthand, growing up and losing pretty much every childhood friend I've grown up to know, or didn't grow up to know. And I think that in America we've forgotten her history, and that in any country where, you know, violence is portrayed as this big, like you said, epidemic, we have to recognize that it came from somewhere, and that in the history of America, she's shown violence. And that's how we've dealt with our issues in the past. And that's how we deal with our issues now. If somebody run up in your house right now, pistols loaded, guns drawn, what are you going to do? Do you want to talk it out? You want to say, could you just give us a few seconds to try and rationalize our differences? No, that person wants something from you, and you want to survive. And so black on black crime, white on white crime, whatever the case may be, it comes down to survival. And I think that in the black community, we've seen each other as that same negative picture that we've been given about ourselves. And so if I look at myself and I look at somebody else that looks like me, and I don't see somebody I trust, I don't see somebody I can put much value into, I don't see somebody that I can necessarily cohabitate with, you know, in society, what am I going to think about that person when it comes time to, and we're having a difference? Man, better you than me.
Yeah. 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 I mean, man, all your points are valid. I wrote an article in 07, simply titled Black Men Are Vanishing. And this idea of the streets being this killing field of black people. Just here on 36th Street, man, just this past weekend, we had another brother shot. I mean, it's ridiculous, man. The idea of us killing each other. Let's parse out the white cop killing black. Let's just get rid of that for a moment. Let's just focus on black people killing black people. Number one, most of the time you're in the same situation. You're living in a depressed, impoverished community where there's high unemployment. There's low education. I'm just going to keep it real, okay? And violence has become the law of the land. Now, here I come along. I'm trying to just take care of myself, my family. I'm trying to get an education. And all of a sudden, I meet you, and you shoot and kill me. I'm not your enemy. Your enemy is yourself. Your enemy is your low self-esteem. Your enemy is your lack of historical knowledge that says, guess what? I'm your brother and you are my keeper and I'm your keeper. And how dare you take my life? I mean, that's how serious this is, man. We need to have a paradigm in the way that we think about this. And get this, brother. This idea of I'm not going to snitch. Man, talk about that.
Snitches get stitches, huh?
I don't understand.
Man, it's crazy. Like, you know, watching shows like First 48, you know, these different crime shows where people are put on the spot to give up information. And they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what? They don't want to be labeled in the hood. They don't want to identify with that population of people who tell on people. Like when you're young, it's like, man, your mama tell you, don't never be a tattletale, you know? Don't be telling on everybody. Everybody don't want to hear that all the time, you know? But at the same time, man, when people are dying in your neighborhood,
that's right.
What do you say?
Yeah.
Is that okay? No. Like, your kids live there. Your family live there. Why aren't you responsible for protecting those people, man?
That's right. You're absolutely
and
right.
And so, man, you know, don't snitch. What is that really saying? That I'm allowing and I condone the continual killing of other blacks in this community. And I'm going to keep my voice silent because I don't want to be labeled. I don't want to be judged. I don't want to be probably taken out if I'm, you know, telling on somebody else.
Yeah. Well, you said something powerful there. You are condoning it. You are part of the problem. You're part of the murder. If you know, I'm going to tell you about me. Hey, I'm going to tell on you. I'm going to be like, hey, his name is Steve. You know, he had address such and such. You want me to go with you? Okay, I'm going to point him out to you because we can't have this. I'm tired of seeing young folk die, innocent people being cut down in the prime of their life. It's just totally unacceptable. And,
man, this is really can be a talk of its own. You know, we have some time to really dig into this subject because it's a lot deeper than us just on the surface saying because of this or because of that. Mm-hmm. But man, we really need to understand what is happening to us.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think we have to look at all of those kind of social ills that we talked about just a few minutes ago, and the high unemployment, the lack of education, the breakdown of the family, all of that we need to talk about. we need to talk about that. Stacey Shelton, a friend of mine, whom I met several years ago. We both did a book signing at Barnes and Noble's, and she's a classy lady, DT. She's a two-time breast cancer survivor. She was named 2010 Best Author by the Oklahoma Gazette. Of quality, okay? Her book is titled Me, the Crazy, and the Breast Cancer. And I'm going to encourage you to pick it up. Matter of fact, we want to bring her on this program to tell her story. And, you know, we've had some good dialogue on Facebook. You know about the we had talked about the incident with the garage door in Norman. And Stacey piped in and said something very powerful. But I don't have time to go into that. But she talks about her experiences growing up and how she was in a diverse area, and she was so thankful for that. And then she talks about this Georgia Doakes, this teacher, this black icon that was the only black teacher at her school. And she reflected on this idea of what it took for her to get to that point where she could actually get a teaching job, get a teaching diploma, and to teach and to be the only one. I mean, that is just, in my opinion, something heroic. And because of that, what she did was she wrote this beautiful poem, man, and she posted it on Facebook. And I reached out to Stacey and I said, Stacey, I said, can I read this on the One Mic, One Voice? And she said to me, she said, Michael, I would be honored. And as we go into break, I want to read this poem. Surely I will not be able to articulate it as eloquently as Stacey would, but I will do my best. It is called Trees. And it's in dedication to this Georgia Doakes. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. This heroic teacher. And it says, I look around me and I see the branches of the trees, strong trees, reaching their arms up to the sky. They are shouting, look, look, it is I. Their voices raised in song of strength, power, and survival. They are the ones who went before us, who dared to break the molds, who looked the criticizers, the naysayers, the one who dared to try and diminish their greatness in the eye and stood their ground. Again, they shouted, see, see, it is me. I am the proud, the brave, the courageous, one who took the step no other was willing to take. I see these trees and I'm humbled. Will I ever be powerful? Will I ever share such a legacy as strong as these fortuitous women? These women who birthed and bled and fought and won, and in doing so left these trees to shade me. One Mic, One Voice. We'll be right back. Thank you, Stacey.
Be sure to share and like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. If you guys would like to email in questions, comments, or topics, you can reach me, DT, at onemiconevoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at onemiconevoice.com.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious. And I tell you what, I am so excited right now. I don't know what to do. If I had my dancing shoes on, it might be on here. We have our first DT.
Very first guest.
Guest in the studio with us, Sarah Burdine, which is a good friend of mine. And Sarah, we're so excited to have you here. We're going to be talking about a very serious topic, but it is an honor to have our first guest.
We welcome you.
Thank you so much.
You can't beat that, because we're planning on having hundreds and hundreds of shows. And for you to be the first guest, we are so, so pleased. And Sarah is here today because, of course, we've been talking about black on black crime. And I had the honor, and I do mean the honor, of knowing her son, Sierra Pierce. And he worked for me. I spent time with him. A tremendous, wonderful young man. I saw so many qualities that he possessed that I believe that are in me. And unfortunately, for Sarah, her family, his friends, his daughter, this community, this world, as DT had spoken in our last podcast, this world, Sierra, is no longer with us. Can you talk about how this experience has been for you? But talk about Sierra to us, to one mic, to one voice.
Gosh, I'd be happy to. There's so much to say about my son. He was such a unique person, as you know. Sierra, his personality went through every age range, every race, every nationality. He was friends with pretty much everybody, and he could easily, he was a chameleon, social chameleon. He could go through any setting and come out just shining. Unfortunately, my son was shot and killed on August 25th, 2012. He was shot out in Spencer at Shaker's Sports Bar. To this day, we're almost at the 3-year anniversary, and it's still an unsolved case. There were 200 witnesses at the scene. People just are not coming forward, and at this point, it's deemed a cold case after this amount of time, and we are just needing people to still come forward. You know, there's so much to say positively about Sierra, and then there's so much negativity around his death. Number one, of course, I'm heartbroken. Mm-hmm. Second thing, I'm just so frustrated. I heard from the district attorney's office yesterday, and a horrible statistic is nationwide, only 30% of murders are ever solved. And in Oklahoma, we have a little bit higher rate than that. Unfortunately, my son falls in that number that it's unsolved still. We're working with the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office. They're handling the investigation at this point. And, you know, I'm still asking people. I've been asking for 3 years now. Anybody with any information, if you heard of someone that was at the scene that night, again, it was August 25th, 2012, Shaker Sports Bar out in Spencer. If you know someone that was there, if you heard of somebody that might have seen something, just any bit of information right now, we're just looking for more pieces to the puzzle. It's another frustration for mine is the no snitch mentality. And Michael, I know we've talked about that. You know, you and I personally about that. I don't understand that. I wasn't raised with that. My children weren't raised with the no snitch mentality. And it's prevalent in this community. It's prevalent in the criminal community. And it's leaving murderers. There is a murderer walking around Oklahoma County that killed my son. He's shopping with us. He's eating with us. He's driving next to us down Broadway Extension. That should not be okay with anybody. That shouldn't be okay. And that people are protecting this person. A lot of times when people, you know, this isn't something that they're going to keep quiet about. If someone shot and killed my son, they're going to tell somebody. Someone saw it. Someone knew about it. So there are a lot of people that know who did this. And for everybody to collectively keep silent is just, it's just unimaginable to me.
Well, it's reprehensible.
It absolutely, yeah. Absolutely is. So I'd like to just, as a mom, I'd like to beg, you know, I'd like to beg somebody to have some decency to come forward with information. And I understand the whole deal about in the criminal world that they might be afraid to. But again, you know, we're accepting that there is a murderer walking around and not doing anything about it. I struggle with that absolutely every day.
Which, and Sarah, I mean, the idea of a person not coming forward, that could be your child. Mm-hmm. Could be next.
Exactly.
Okay. It could be you.
Exactly.
It could be your neighbor. It could be your friend. I mean, that's profound that we have someone, a murderer, walking around, as you said, shopping, living their life as if they've gotten away with something. And I say, how dare you sit there with this information that can bring closure and also get a dangerous person off the streets.
Exactly.
We need to do better. And I'm saying, I'm encouraging. We're going to be pushing this on our Facebook page. We're going to be talking about Sierra and any information. Come forward. We don't even have to know who you are. We want to see these cases solved. And I'm going to deviate just for a second because I want to just describe him. Because we said his, you know, but he was a tall brother too now. And smooth looking. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, he, you know, when I was, we were at Ralph Ellison Library. I mean, the ladies loved to come up to the front counter when Sierra was there. And so, I mean, he was just a beautiful, beautiful person, intelligent. And it's just so sad that we lose the best of the best. And DT, you remind me a lot of him, soft spoken, intelligent, focused, and like Sarah said, he could be in any conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did his homework. I expected, I think like so many others, just to see great things, from his life. And how is the level of support for you? Are you receiving that? How's the family doing? How's because I know he's got a brother and a sister, and talk to us about that.
Well, he actually has a younger brother, my son Cameron, a younger sister, my daughter Lauren, and then he has a stepsister, Alicia, and we have struggled. This has been absolutely unimaginable, and we've struggled. We're still struggling, quite frankly. And we're, you know, rather than just having Sierra's death and grieving for the loss of Sierra, say if it were a car accident, then we would just grieve for him and heal on our own. We have the double thing of grieving and then the frustration of there's a murder investigation, it's an open investigation, someday hopefully there will be an arrest and a trial and a conviction. So we're not able to just grieve and carry on. It's grief mixed with frustration. And that is very difficult. And it's difficult for my children. They're teenagers. And of course, a stepsister is, well into her 20s, but they're still not used to processing this kind of information and knowing how to deal with the emotions of that. I would like to say there are two wonderful programs that we're involved in. And one is the Crime Victims Compensation Plan.
Okay.
I don't know if a lot of listeners know this, but it's something that's available to any crime victim, not just homicide survivors, families, but a lot of crime victims are eligible for this. It's through the District Attorney's Council, and we have received financial support through them. We've received counseling through them. It's a wonderful program. Also, I'm part of the Oklahoma Homicide Survivor Support Group, and it is the most difficult group I've ever belonged to. I don't like being a part of it just because it's a fraternity or sorority that no one wants to be a part of. Everybody in there has lost a loved one to murder, and it's a horrible thing to go through, but it's a wonderful support group that everybody there understands. We understand the emotions of the whole up and down. Of, you know, today is a good day, the next day it might be a horrible day that you just relive everything. So it's a wonderful group. They've got a great Facebook page. September 25th is the National Homicide Victims Day of Remembrance. So we're going to have something with the district attorney's office on that day. So there are different groups. And again, they're wonderful groups, but, you know, who wants to be a part of that? It's sad that any family. And I think the other week, maybe 2 weeks ago, we had our 46th murder in Oklahoma City alone. So there are 46 other families times all of their relatives that are dealing with the exact same thing I'm going through and that my children are going through. And again, if you think of that 46 murders and only 30% of those will get solved, it's tragic, absolutely tragic.
Yes, it is. And talk about his daughter and how that whole experience has played out for you and your family.
Well, I wish the listeners could see me smiling right now because she is absolutely the sunshine in all of this tragedy. And honestly, it's bittersweet. She's a wonderful, wonderful 2.5-year-old. She's thriving and doing great. We see her regularly. She's named Sierra after her dad.
Yeah.
But it's so bittersweet when we see her. She looks like my son. She talks about him. We have pictures, of course, of Sierra around our house. And it's sad that she'll never meet him. She'll never know anything about him other than our stories. Pardon me. We take her to the cemetery regularly. She talks to him. She will go to a picture and talk to him and wave at him and blow him kisses. And it's wonderful that we have a part of Sierra, and it's heartbreaking at the same time. So I see her every other week. It's wonderful. It's like visitation. She's precious to us, absolutely precious. And I hate, again, she was born 4 months after Sierra was killed. So I hate for her that she's growing up without a dad. I hate that my son didn't get the wonderful opportunity to raise a daughter that he would have been so, so in love with. It's hard.
Yeah. We need your help in solving this case, and it's a small world. You've heard from Sarah today, and Sarah, I applaud your courage. You are a great example of a mother's love, a mother's commitment, a mother's fight. And I can only imagine, you know, what you have been through. And I hope that that from my end that I have been of some sort of support, because I felt so very honored to know him and to play a small role in his life. And so we're going to continue to talk about this. You did a wonderful job in raising him. He left us with great memories, and it's the positive that lives on and the impact. I mean, at the end of life, what do you want to leave? You know, some leave wealth and some leave. But the most valuable thing is impact among people. And the fact that we're sitting here talking about him today
exactly
represents his impact.
Thank right. you.
Okay.
Exactly.
That and so, you know, is there a number or something that if somebody had something they could call and if you could give that out, if you...
Absolutely. If they can call the Oklahoma County Sheriff's Office, ask for the Investigation Division. Their number is 405-713-1000. And again, ask for investigations. You will get their secretary, and she will take any information and pass it on to the investigators working on Sierra's case.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking about Sierra. And you know what? We could not have a more important guest for our first guest ever. It could not have been better than this.
Well, thank you, and
I just appreciate you coming here.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. One mic, one voice. We will be right back. Wow, wow, wow. Welcome back to the One Mic. Yes, yes.
That was some heavy stuff right there.
Real, real deep stuff. I mean, Sarah is phenomenal. And her courage, her dignity, her commitment to her son. Listen to my voice. If you know anything, you can be anonymous. You can email us. We need to bring closure and peace to this family. You know what? You heard it. We experienced it. We were in the room, and let me tell you something. We were trying to keep the tears from falling. This has got to stop. But you can help us solve this crime, this murder, and get this coward off of the streets of Oklahoma City. Wow.
Wow, man. She said something that really stuck to me after the mic went off. She said she hears her son sometimes. Sam, don't give up, mama.
Yeah.
Don't give up, mama.
Wow.
Or sometimes screaming it.
Yeah.
Man.
Man. Deep, brother. I mean, that's why we're here. One mic, one voice. That's why we're here, to give voice to you. And Sarah, I can tell you, I admire her with the utmost respect. DT, what we got coming up, man?
Next week, we got our good friend Kareem Muhammad coming on, talking about the Teachers Appreciation Foundation. Kareem is the founder of this foundation, a nonprofit organization advocating for the network and support system for school teachers and staff. So he'll be on the show giving us a little bit of information about that and rolling into some conversation.
Yeah, I mean, Kareem is a... he's a bad brother, man.
Not just talking. Nah, man is doing things.
Man, he's doing things. And the brother can dress.
That's it.
Man, I'm like, man, his closet must be, you know, his closet probably bigger than Trump's. Because he be with the bow tie, man. I'm like, man, this. And maybe he don't wear the same suit twice. You know, maybe he got it like that. we'll have to find out when he come on, because he's a sharp brother intellectually.
Sure.
But the brother is smooth. So sure. we really look forward to him. And down the pipeline, we got Gregory Jerome coming on. He's talking about the first ever hip-hop festival that's going to be happening here in Oklahoma City. He's organizing that. Another dynamic brother that is doing big things, not just here, all throughout the country. And he is local, folks, and he's going to come on and talk about that. Nathan Lee is going to come on at the end of the month. He is also he's an artist, a sculptor, a painter. He's executive director of Inclusion in Art, and he's going to come on, and we're going to talk about Black anger when he comes on. So
got some exciting stuff coming up.
We do. It's been there's other things that we had on the docket, but when Sarah came in, she shut all that down. What was said was needed to be said today. DT, man, this is our third one. Beautiful thing, brother. Standing tall with you. Check out our new website, onemiconevoice.com.
There's a link on the website to send your information. You want to send comments, suggestions for the show topics. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
I think that's it. We out, D.
We out. Till next time.
History will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solve nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.